Welcome back to the Giselle Show podcast mit friends, where we are making stuff up, being real and talking about it. Hey, quick shout out to everyone who is letting other people know about this podcast. Thank you! New listeners is finding us online. They've been downloading the podcast. You know, my technical guy, Anthony, he keeps track of all the numbers of where people are listening from, how many downloads. I think they call it the metrics. He keeps track of all the metrics. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking, if he told me, hey, we're getting tons of new listeners, that would probably freak me out. But then also if he said to me, hey, we have a lot fewer listeners, then that would freak me out too. And if he said, hey, we have exactly the same number of listeners as we always have, guess what that would do? Freak me out. So I said to him, Anthony, you just maybe keep the metrics to yourself. But we do thank you for sharing the word, helping to people finding us online and downloading the podcast. We post clips on the Facebook and the tweets, so you can help us build up our creative podcast corral. Just by checking out our social media feeds and give your thumbs up or your stamp of approval or your tweet of approval and let your network know about the podcast. Thank you. Later in the podcast, we have a comedy sketch from the Giselle Show podcast players, and we have some more great 100-word submissions. But coming up now, let us continue a little bit more of the conversation with Catherine Ingram. Here we go.
So I had a question. Last night, one of my friends had read a quote from somebody who's really big in the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
And she had said that ego is the enemy of effective organizing. And I'm really interested in the intersection of spirituality and activism and having, you know, a conversation between these two communities, because a lot of the time I feel in the spiritual communities that I'm a part of, there's a deep immersion in the self, but then a lack of actually putting that self into action, into collective action. And then in the activist spheres that I'm a part of, there's a lot of burnout.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, if ego is the enemy of effective organizing, what are some tangible ways that people who are out in the protests, in, you know, who are being directly affected by so much oppression, who don't have as much privilege as you and I do, tangible ways for them to connect back in to cultivate this passionate presence in these really high stress situations.
Right. Yes. I've seen that too over the many, many years. And just kind of ironically, your moment in your own journey is so similar to mine at around probably your age. I also felt being immersed in sort of a Dharma world, and also then becoming a sort of a consciousness journalist, I really was deeply interested in this merger between spirituality and activism. And my first book is called In the Footsteps of Gandhi, and it is actually all about that. It's a collection of interviews with people that I felt represented that blend the best, at least the best that I could get hold of.
I've got to read this book.
Yeah. So it's interviews with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu and Thich Nhat Hanh and Joan Baez and a whole bunch of people who represent that confluence of spirituality and activism. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that those people were all motivated by love. Mm. They were motivated because of the love of their communities. They, like with Cesar Chavez, for instance, do you know who he is?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm sitting at his kitchen table and he's saying to me, and the most humble house, I mean, you know, tiny little place, like three rooms or four rooms maybe, a little formica table, you know, and he began the farm workers movement at that table because they were all working in the fields and being mistreated. And they began to talk about it around his table and began to think about how can we how can we come together and try to figure out some way to handle this? And it was incredibly dangerous, and you know, the history of that whole thing is, there's a lot of brutality, as with many movements that go up against, that speak truth to power. So anyway, what I began to realize with him and all the ones I was with over the years is he was just motivated by love. By love for his people, by a sense of justice. And having that as your touchstone goes a long way to giving you a lot of strength and energy to keep going. It's love of your community, love of your people. But I think it's also very important. And each of the people I interviewed had a kind of spiritual life. I think it's very important to have some kind of, it can't just be ideology. You know, as you say, people just burn out on anger. Essentially, anger is exhausting. You know, it has to be grounded in some connection that is greater than oneself, or something that allows the system to relax and quiet itself.
Because that helps to humble the ego or expose it. That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you specifically about making artwork and creativity. I love, love, love what you say about it goes from getting something from the making world. Art or from the world to giving something away.
Yeah, giving something back to the world, yeah.
Do you know, that feel like such a beautiful truth to come back to, because I was going to have all these questions of, well, what do you do when you have writer's block? And, you know, for people who are writers, or what do you do when you get a bad review, or all this and all that. But if you're just coming from giving something away, that automatically matter less and less. Reviews, writer block.
Yeah.
Because you just say, okay, what can I give away today? What feels like it would be fun? What do I have right now to give away?
Yeah, absolutely. And haven't you had the experience? I know I have. And apparently there's a lot of neuroscience that backs this up, that for many people, not all, their happy chemicals of their brain spike higher when they're giving a gift than when they're receiving one, even though receiving is nice as well. But there's this intense dopamine rush that happens when you're giving something. Yeah, you can start to tune to that channel again, whereby you find little things to do for people, little small things, you know. And it's so pleasurable. It's an open secret. Service is an incredibly, you know, direct path for well-being.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Yeah.
I had a question. In the process of giving, you know, there is also that element of receiving, and how actually the receiving element is really difficult. And thinking about it in terms of compliments, when I get a compliment from somebody, it's so hard for me to receive that compliment. I'm a yoga teacher, and if somebody tells me like, oh, your class was so amazing, I'm like, they're just saying that. But then if somebody came up to me and was like, your class was awful, I'd be like so wrecked, and I'd really believe that they thought it was an awful class. And I'm wondering how to deal with that kind of situation.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the case of someone giving you the positive feedback, if you can, for the moment, step out of the way and realize that this is pleasurable for the person to tell you, right? That this is something that they're trying to connect with you and express their gratitude, just as you might do that for someone you feel grateful to. So you don't want to deprive them of that lovely moment. You want to be able to graciously let them have that lovely moment with you. And why I say step out of the way is that I'm sure you probably already have experienced this enough as in a teaching role. It starts to feel very impersonal. You know, you start to feel that you're granted a gift of being a good yoga teacher. You're granted that gift and you're offering that gift, but there's some way in which you can't really take ownership. So you start to sense that you can't take ownership of the praise and you can't really take ownership of the blame either. You know, that people have their own agendas. So it's a kind of entrainment in a very impersonal way of being in the teacher role. And yeah. It's very necessary because all kinds of stuff comes at you. If you start taking ownership of any of it, mm-hmm. especially the praise, you know, that can get dangerous.
For me, like acting on behalf of the divine and stepping outside that bigger self that you talked about as opposed to that little self, and working from that place definitely helps to not take on any of the compliments or any of the negative feedback that I may receive. Yeah.
And you'll probably get better and better at that as it goes.
I like how you have said in the past the nature of thoughts, you know, that thoughts is non-sticking and we can just let them come and go. Because I have had the experience of really getting caught up by my thoughts, swept away from present awareness mm-hmm. and, like you say, trapped in a little closet with our neurotic thoughts.
Yes.
So what is thought? And how can we use our thoughts? Some of them we need to use.
Yes, of course. Some of them are highly functional, some are relational, some are insightful, creative, all of those things. Now, as I said last night, most of them are spam.
That's right.
You know, most of it is spam, but some of it is, you know, pretty good. And you get, again, from the quiet of the heart, you get very discerning about which ones you're going to pay attention to, which ones have to be dealt with, which ones are useful, and which ones you can just ignore as nonsense.
And the good thing is you don't have to fight the thought.
Not at all.
You just, it goes away on its own.
Totally on its own. You can't make one stay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, you know, you don't have to do anything. Yeah. Just, and then the discernment increases with the experiment that you're making. It just gets better and better.
Of discerning what thoughts to pay attention to, what thoughts to just let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You kind of know which ones are going to go down a dark alley, you know. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
with some nefarious characters waiting there to beat you up. And others that are either neutral or lead into a kind of brightness, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you just get very, you know, in a very relaxed way, you get better and better at noticing which is which. And, you know, again, this is mind management, you know.
Mind management. Yeah. And it just starts with noticing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Noticing, exactly. And a little bit of the directing of the attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Noticing and directing attention.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, initially you have this intentionality that directs the attention back to, we're not talking about going somewhere else, we're talking about back to reality, right?
Ah, yes.
So initially you're intending to come back into reality, into the moment you're actually directly experiencing, you know.
Yes.
And then after a point, that becomes the habitual default position.
It's just relaxing in the mm-hmm. present moment.
Yeah. And then you only need the intentionality when there's a drifting off. But then it becomes a very sort of normal. One of the things I love about our week-long retreats, and I highly recommend our Italy retreat.
Oh, yes. We're going to have information on the website, okay. And I give you Catherine's website. These retreats are great.
Yeah, they're so powerful. And one of the aspects that make them so powerful is that it normalizes all that we're talking about. You know, that you see how easy it can be to just, you know, go through the day in present awareness. You show up at the meals, you show up at the hall for the sittings and the dialogues and yoga if you want. You know, you're not just laying about in a cave. But but you're moving through space, you're eating, you're, you know, whatever, reading in this awareness that becomes easier and easier to just more or less stay in. And that gives a great confidence that you could actually live like that. You could live your life like that.
Back in your regular life, with your job and your relationships.
Yes, exactly. And even though it's a little more challenging back in the workaday world and it's going a lot faster and all of that, you have that touchstone and you're able to return to it fairly easily. Yes. You know, and frequently.
Yeah. Catherine, thank you so much for sharing your beautiful perspective with us.
Thank you so much.
Shira, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It's such an honor to be here.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that was my interview with Catherine Ingram, and the wonderful Shira Barlas was also with us. Listen, so for more information, if you like this and you like Catherine, I'm going to send you to her website. It is catherineingram.com. Catherine with a C, and Ingram is spelled I-N-G-R-A-M. And on her website there she have readings and videos and audios. You can get her books, the In the Footsteps of Gandhi, what we was talking about, and also her second book, or maybe third, is called Passionate Presence. It's all about her perspective like this, and I just love this book, Passionate Presence. Really great book, easy to read. She also have a podcast of her own. It's called In the Deep. And you can find that on iTunes and also on her website. And also on the website, she have information about the retreats that she lead and her public events. She's giving talks now in Los Angeles for a couple of months. And then the retreat, I think she have a big one coming up to Italy in October, something like this. So all of that is at catherineingram.com. Go there or be square, as they say. Now, we could not just go have a conversation with Catherine without doing some fun little game, because you know me, I like to play games. So, we have make up a little game what we play with Catherine. Here it is. Now, I brought with us a little bit of a game. This is called Live or Buy, or Who Said It Best, the Guru or the Ad Exec? So you try to guess which is the guru and which is the ad. Here's one. The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. Or put a tiger in your tank.
That one's too easy.
Okay. I give you another one. It is not insult from another that causes you pain. It is the part of your mind that agrees with the insult. Agree only with the truth about you and you are free. Or think outside the bun.
Again, this is too easy.
I really like that first one, though. That was Alan Cohen. I've never met him. Do you know Alan Cohen?
No,
I've never met him. But I really like that what causes you pain from the insult is the part of your mind that agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's also Katie Byron's whole teaching.
Oh.
That's very much her teaching, yeah.
Maybe she know him.
Yeah.
Maybe he know her.
Yeah, maybe.
And think outside the bun. That's Taco Bell's thinking. Okay, here's another one. Stay close to any sounds that make you glad you are alive, or gather around the good stuff. Those are closer.
I'm going to still pick the first one.
The first one. The first one is
the guru.
Is Hafiz.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that how you
Hafiz,
say? Hafiz. That's a really nice one. The sound of things that make you glad you are alive. That's nice. I like that. Okay, here we go. Creative clutter is better than idle neatness. Or if it doesn't get all over the place, it doesn't belong in your face.
Wow. That's a toss-up.
You like them both?
Kind of. They're zany.
The second one is Carl's Jr. The first one is anonymous, but it was the that one was the philosophy. Creative clutter is better than idle neatness.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Here's another one. Though we travel the world over to find the beautiful, we must carry it with us or we find it not. Or you are now free to move about the country. The first one was Ralph Waldo Emerson. Yeah. Did you know that?
No, but, you know, I quoted something last night that was quite similar. Do you remember? I said the musk deer searches the world over for the source of its own scent.
That was that same, you were talking about how all of these different schools of spiritual thought or religions, mm-hmm. or these words point to the same thing. Mm-hmm. The kingdom of God is within you, mm-hmm. the musk, elk, the deer, whatever. Yeah. all of this.
Yes.
And then now Ralph Waldo Emerson carrying it with.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
He probably said it first.
So speaking of which, here's another one. The kingdom of heaven is within you, or do you have the bunny inside?
I'm going to go with Jesus. The first one.
Yeah, the first one. The second one is the Energizer bunny. Okay, here we go. Try to be a rainbow in someone's cloud. Mm. Or taste the rainbow.
Yeah,
those are both nice.
But I think the first one is...
The first one.
Yeah.
The first one was Maya Angelou. The second one was Skittles. Okay, and is there a last one? Do not seek the truth. Only cease to cherish your opinions.
Third Zen patriarch.
Oh, you know that one.
Of course I do.
Or have it your way. That's Burger King.
Yeah, the first one is Sangstan, the third Zen patriarch.
Sangstan, that's right. I was going to ask you how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
Well, you're very good. There's no fooling you.
I think we could have all done them.
Welcome back. It's me again, Giselle. That was some fun we was having with Catherine Ingram and trying to guess those quotes. She was funny. She know all those quotes. Hey, so we have got some emails and submission to share. First, our friend Julie in Santa Monica. Earlier, I read her 100 words about a one-person parade. But last month, she sent in 100 words about the holiday season. And even though the holidays is past, I just love what she wrote. So here she is. She called the Skype line and record this. Here we go.
Hi, this is Julie in Santa Monica, California. And here's my 100 words. A most unexpected gift. 'Tis the season of giving, and it turns out someone gave me the flu. Kind of a secret Santa thing, since they didn't leave their name on it. Now, I'm not one to complain, total bullshit, but this is the third illness I've had in 2 months. 'Tis the season of giving, so no one has spared their advice. According to some, my immune system needs a boost. You think? And to others, this is a great sign that I'm letting go of old baggage. Can they both be true? 'Tis the season of giving, so in the midst of my misery, between a barf and a moan, I look in the mirror and start to cry. And it seems I can't stop. I find I am apologizing out loud for all the ways I have hurt myself in this life. And when I'm done, I accept my apology. And I am grateful for this most unexpected gift.
Oh, thank you, Julie. I love that. I just love that. She forgave herself and to have that most unexpected gift. That was beautiful. We also have a submission from our friend Todd Haney. Every time I meet somebody whose name is Todd, I'm always hoping that they spell it with 3 D's. T-O-D-D-D. Just for fun. If your name is Todd, do me a favor, spell it with 3 D's, and then tweet to me that you did it, and that will make me happy. Todd Haney, tweet in,
his 100 words of mission is a poem called An Eternity's Worth. I walk as you walk, as we all walk, one step after another on an infinite road, the beginning as close as the end, as near as the first heartbeat, and as close as the last. We have, all of us, seen it all. Many bodies, many forms, many lives. But the core of us, the truest part of us, present, born in the moment, which superseded all moments, will be there at the end, when we stand side by side, as we did at the start, with an eternity's worth of stardust on our heels. Well, Todd Haney, that was beautiful. What a beautiful poem. I almost want to read it again. Do you guys want me to read it again? I'm going to read it again so we can enjoy it. I'll read it a little faster this time. But there's so much in there. I walk as you walk, as we all walk, one step after another on an infinite road, the beginning as close as the end, as near as the first heartbeat and as close as the last. We have, all of us, seen it all. Many bodies, many forms, many lives. But the core of us, the truest part of us, present, born in the moment which superseded all moments, will be there at the end, when we stand side by side as we did at the start, with an eternity's worth of stardust on our heels. Oh, that's great, Todd, with 3 D's. Beautiful, beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. You're listening to the Giselle Show podcast, Meet Friends, and we will be right back.